Word of mouth.
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 Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. The increasing prominence of women's issues on a global scale has a number of scholars and activists wondering if we are on the verge of a feminist spring. 2 years after seething political and social discontent exploded into protests that forever changed the landscape of the Middle East, mass movements are forming around women's issues. From the streets of India to Steubenville, Ohio, protesters are marching against sexual violence against women. In Syria, Bahrain, and Yemen, women are active members of the ongoing resistance. Here in the U.S., a record number of women are now in Congress and running states as governors. And issues like reproductive health and gun control have activated formerly silent female voters. Dr. Sahar Khamis is assistant professor of communication at the University of Maryland. She's written extensively about female activism in the Arab Spring uprisings and joins us now for a read of where those struggles stand today. Sahar Khamis, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So you wrote a paper last year on the so-called feminist spring, but you were looking back then at the uprisings. How did those movements in Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, Libya change the role of women in the region?
Yes, actually, there has been a lot of, potential for women to actually become leaders, not just in the political arena, but also in the social and cultural, economic arenas as well. Women have been very much at the forefront of these movements, and they played very important roles as activists, as journalists, as eyewitnesses, as citizen journalists, and as political opponents of the regimes that were ousted in Libya and Egypt and Tunisia, and which are still struggling. You know, people are still struggling for freedom in places like Syria and Bahrain and Yemen. 2 years after the emergence of the so-called Arab Awakening or Arab Spring, there is now mixed feelings about where all of this is taking women in the region. Mm-hmm. In other words, although there has been much more optimism 2 years ago about women's agenda being promoted and women earning greater rights and playing more prominent roles, I can hear now a different tone of skepticism and, you know, sometimes just asking questions like, okay, is this all helping women? How much could this really be a positive change for women? Could women earn greater rights? And the reason is because, you know, there are so many obstacles that are now facing women and many challenges that they have to face, whether with the rise of political Islam, and some of the political Islamist groups do have a strict agenda on women and women's issues and may not allow women's issues to really become at the forefront. And then there are also obstacles related to violence and eruption of, you know, sometimes chaos or even rape on a massive scale, as we have seen in Libya and Syria. So all of that casts some doubt on, you know, where women are going in this very troubled part of the world.
Well, let's look at some of those issues. Islamist fighters were routed this week from northern Mali. Women there were celebrating, coming out and dancing, taking off their veils. I'm reminded of Iran. What's going on in the Arab Spring now? Women helped overthrow the Shah in 1979, mm-hmm. but then their rights were completely subverted by these theocratic regimes that followed. Now, looking at the world now, women who communicate with each other on social media mm-hmm. no longer as isolated. Can they go back? These women who helped make these uprisings possible.
There is no going back, in my opinion, on, you know, human rights issues, freedom, democracy in general, and even on women's rights in particular, because people now know that they have a voice, and they know that they have a will, and they know that they can change things around. And I think they're becoming increasingly confident in their abilities to do so. So, you know, amid all of this, you know, suspicion and skepticism I was just talking about, I also do not want to paint a very dark image, because I think that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. The fact that people have the will to actually say no and to march out in the streets, and women to play such a very important, prominent role, in my opinion, there is no turning back on women's issues. And I just want to make one important point, which is I do not want to put all, you know, Islamist groups in one, in one parcel or in one basket, because they're not all the same. For example, a group like the Muslim Brotherhood, which took the lead in Egypt, does have a quite moderate agenda in in terms of women's issues, and they do have women who are political representatives, and I would not be very afraid of their agenda on women. While some of the Salafi groups, for example, which have a much, much more strict and conservative interpretation of religious texts, might, in my opinion, pose more fear in terms of curbing women's existence in the public sphere. So I just want to make sure that we know that there are so many different shades on this spectrum.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because they are different groups in all different countries. We can't lump these things together.
Absolutely.
But let's look at some of the reasons that people do predict that we may be on the verge of a quote-unquote feminist spring in India. The gang rape and death of a 23-year-old woman. She was gang raped by 16 men on a bus in Delhi. Really struck a chord there. So what's going on there? If we look at the Arab Spring, all of this simmering discontent exploded like tinder. Is there enough there for a revolution for women's sake?
I think that there are the seeds, you know, so to speak, of this kind of revolution. But I always think that women's movements in general, whether in India and Egypt and other parts of the world, need more structure and more organization. And that's what I keep telling everybody who's like, okay, so what's going to happen with women's movements? The answer is, it's very much up to women themselves. They are the ones who have to find a way to become more organized, to become more structured, to assume positions of leadership and to put their own agendas and demands, you know, on the table. And if those in power do not meet their expectations, they can always, you know, vote them out of office if they have the power to do so. So in other words, I would really like to see women being more organized, more structured, more empowered to ask and demand for their rights in every part of the world. I see some positive, you know, a change in this direction, and even the, you know, horrific and tragic incident you mentioned in India did cause an uproar in this society in terms of, you know, what's going on, how is this affecting women and women's rights, and you know, horrific things like rape and so on. And by the way, rape has been also a massive issue in Libya and in Syria. Mm-hmm. I've been talking to Syrian activists, and it's just horrific. I mean, really, the international consciousness has to do something about this. International society cannot just stand by and watch these women being raped and being humiliated on such a massive scale and do nothing about it. It's just not right.
We're talking about what some call a feminist spring that's blossoming in several places across the world. Dr. Sahar Khamis is with us. She's from the University of Maryland. She followed the role of women during the Arab Spring uprisings 2 years ago and has continued to follow that momentum. And Dr. Khamis, your work has really focused on how these movements were organized and by women and youth with access to social media. Now, how about in the Bedouin women in northwest Jordan protesting to be educated with no access to social media?
Yeah, I really would like to put this in perspective, because the role of social media has been important in terms of being catalysts. You know, they're speeding up the process of social and political change. They're giving it momentum. But we cannot say that they are, quote-unquote, the source or the cause of these movements. Therefore, I'm very careful with terms like the Facebook revolution in Egypt or the Twitter uprising or the YouTube revolution. I take these words with a, you know, grain of salt. I take it with some reservation, because these tools are just tools. They're not magic. They're not magical devices, and they cannot cause about change all by themselves. It's people on the ground who are the actual force, they're the actual pulse, they're the actual motivators of these movements. So it's always the people themselves, whether it's youth, women, average people, even Bedouin women, like you mentioned in Jordan, they are the blood of these revolutions, and it's up to them to call for the rights. The social media could be there to help in networking, in organization, in amplifying, in catalyzing, in mobilizing. That's fine. But they cannot cause the change if people and women are not willing to go out in the street and pay the price of their own freedom.
Here in the U.S., there's legislation right now concerning violence against women, and it's pretty much on life support, not doing well. Now, I look and ask, are we there? Are we really looking at a revolution in the way that women are regarded and their rights protected?
I think so. I mean, people think that, you know, in the Western world, like the United States or Europe, that, you know, the fight for women's rights is over. Women have, you know, their golden rights. It's not true. I mean, even in a country like the U.S., like you mentioned, there are still a lot of room for fighting for women's issues. You know, things like contraception, things like, you know, women's right to choose family planning methods. All of these things are important issues. Even equal pay, for God's sake, is still an issue in a country like the U.S., which is so advanced and has a good agenda in general on human rights and women's rights, there is still room for women's groups to really become more effective and be more organized and make their voices heard. And I've seen some, you know, use of social media here in the U.S. as well, on YouTube, for example, to call for, you know, women's rights to contraception, family planning methods, equal pay, all of these. So I think that there is room still for more work to be done, even in some of the most advanced countries in the world, like the U.S.
Sahar Khamis, a member of the Affiliate Faculty of Women's Studies in the Consortium on Race, Gender, and Ethnicity at the University of Maryland. I'm told you have to leave us to get to class. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So how does one become a female campaigner for rights? Maybe start with Feminist Boot Camp. We'll have that story in just a moment.